WIOX is supported by you and the following underwriters. 1053 Main Street Gallery in Fleischmann's. Designed as a space to support a vibrant and active artistic community nestled within the Catskill Mountains. Kicking off their 2024 season with Interplay, an exhibition of new paintings by Catskills region artists Deborah Friedman, Janice LaMotta, and Amy Masters. Public reception at the opening on Saturday, May 4th from 4 to 7. 1053maingallery.com. MTC, Margaretville Telephone Company, locally operated and employee-owned. Providers of internet, TV, and phone service for both residential and business customers in the Central Catskills region. High-speed internet for transactions, streaming, remote work, and online education. More than 200 cable TV channels for local, regional, and national news and entertainment. And unlimited local and long-distance phone service. MTC. Margaretville Telephone Company, connecting our communities. More information at mtctelcom.com. Watershed Cafe, Roxbury's front porch on Main Street in the heart of Roxbury. For breakfast and lunch, all sorts of sandwiches, coffees, teas, juices, smoothies, and more. Eat inside, on the porch, or meals to go. Watershed Cafe, Main Street, Roxbury. Open every day at 7 a.m. WatershedRoxbury.com.
Hello, this is Rosina Montana, and I host Various Voices, alternate Thursday afternoons at 2, right here on WIOX Roxbury Community Radio. We're live and local in New York's Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM, MTC Cable Channel 20, and WIOXRadio.org.
You are listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20, 107.5 FM on the campus of SUNY Delhi, and everywhere at WIOXradio.org on computers or smartphones. This is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and Zane. Zane, how's it going?
Good, good. How are you?
I'm well, you know. I pruned my last apple tree over the weekend up the road from me on a neighbor's property. You know, I was pruning a tree that really no one kind of owns. I just take care of it. And then the neighbor walked across the road and said, "Hey, why don't you prune this one?" So that was the last apple tree of the year. I think I will prune. I will prune. Not going to prune anymore.
So they're leafing out pretty good down there, probably.
Not this year.
You know, no, they're green, and the green's coming out. Yeah. The leaves are just like, you know, the size of a mouse ear, maybe.
Yeah, they're just waking up here. A little bit of green tip.
Yeah. Kingston, I was down there, and the people were mowing their lawns. Although one of our board members up in Fleischmann's mowed his lawn, so in Halkett Center.
My neighbor mowed his lawn. Freaks me out.
I don't mow in April. No mow April.
No mow April.
No mow May.
I know it's no mow May. That's,
can you go another
much.
Month?
That's too obsessive.
Yeah, that's a.
And then you're like, you got too much grass to mow.
Lots,
you
know? To mow, June.
Oh, my lawn's different that way. You know, I have a lot of flowers that come up. I mow my lawn 3 to 4 times a season, whether it needs it or not.
Yeah.
And it drives my neighbor crazy, but he mows his once a week.
Yeah.
He cut it already, and I'm thinking, I went over and I said, are you trying to make me look bad, neighbor? You really got to cut this out. Oh, I just lubed the machine and whatever. But
they love it.
They love it.
I lubed it up. Got her all ready.
And we're blowing the mulch around. Oh, my God. He's right in his glory.
I saw one guy in Rosendale with a hand mower mowing and had the leaf blower on the other side of it. As I was like, that is awesome. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus. They love it, you know?
That's,
you know, I get it.
That's
hey,
it.
There's worse things you could do, I guess.
Well, yeah, definitely. But, you know, some people are just like that, and it's not me. You know, I usually let flowers grow before I start mowing.
Yeah.
But I pruned my last apple tree on last week, I think Wednesday, a week from today. Last week, I had, you know, that flowering crab that tipped over in my yard. Mm. We had a heavy, you know, it was a late April snowstorm. Yeah, I bet we got a foot or more of wet, heavy snow. And, you know, it was on the lawn, and it was kind of leaning toward the light anyway. But I got up and looked out the window, and the thing was laying on the ground. So I took a tow strap and, you know, I pulled it back up with a winch and come along, and I left it there for 4 years. And then, you know, this spring, I took the strap off, and it fell back down. I said, well, I guess you want to be there. I was going to cut that whole thing, but I decided, I think that tree will look really beautiful and nice. I mean, it's got a beautiful flowers on it, and gets little apples that I actually use in the fall. But anyway, and they're sweet tasting. A lot of the crabs aren't that great, but this one's a good one. So I pruned it up, and just I took a black locust, like a 5/4 by 6, and I kept it up. I just cut a crotch in it, or a U shape, put it under a limb, and I jack the thing up, and just so I can get my lawnmower under it to mow. And you know,
how about the one by the basketball hoop?
No, that's the one over on the lawn.
Oh, right.
Yeah, by the hedges. Mm. The one by the basketball hoop, that's got, well, it's getting leaves on it already.
Yeah.
And you know, my flower and cherry tree is full bloom right now. That thing is amazing.
Yeah,
this year.
The flowers down in the Rondo Valley are beautiful right now.
Well, we've had so far one of the best springs, and I mean, the Facentia at my mill is brilliant yellow. I see a lot of them are, you know, as brilliant as that one is, but that one, for some reason, just come out so, I mean, it's beautiful this year.
Yeah.
And the Facentias, they don't do great every year. But the weather's been perfect for the vegetation, and as long as we don't get another, you know, I'm hoping we don't get some weird-ass 10 below or 10 above or 15 degree night.
Hopefully not.
When our apple blossoms are forming, because we've had, you know, I've been ripped off by nature 2 years in a row for my
ripped
apple.
Off.
I just feel violated.
I feel triggered, huh?
Anyway, so we're talking about.
Yeah,
state.
Well, let me just say that, you know, yeah, every third Wednesday we have Mr. Mead on, Mr. Gary Mead, and this is part 3 of the state trees of the United States, right?
That's it. And, you know, we have to call Kentucky now.
Yeah, you already called Missouri.
I called Missouri, and I will explain later why we have to give Kentucky a call. But anyway, we're up to, we left off with Idaho last month, and that was a western white pine. But we're up to Illinois. Our a lot of state trees are oak, and the white oak seems to be the winner of the state trees. I think the most white oak has the most states on that have white oak for their state tree. And with, you know, Kentucky, we're looking to add one more. But and maybe I'll call Illinois and have them change that to something a little more.
Why do you think everyone's choosing white oak?
It's because of its food and lumber quality, and it's, I mean, it's good for so many things. Mm-hmm.
Extremely versatile. It's, for, you know, whiskey barrels to,
and the wood's stellar, and you know, it doesn't, you know, it's a, it, it, it lasts outdoors. I mean, it doesn't last like black locust or something like that, but you know, it's, you can get a good 30-40 year run out of a white oak outdoors. Because back when I first started the mill, people come in the spring, and you know, I was selling 2x10s and 2x12s hemlock, and you know, you use them for planters, you're going to get 10-12 years out of them, maybe. And I mean, they start rotting from the bottom up, but anyway, the you know, I said, geez, for, you know, back then wood wasn't that expensive, so I called Hofer Lumber in Calicoon, and he sent me white oak logs, you know, about February, March, and I saw out some 2x, and you know, I tell the folks, I said, you know, it's a third more in price, but it's going to last 30 years outdoors, and you're not going to be back here in 5 or 6 years buying hemlock again. So they started using the white oak for that. White oak, rock oak.
You know, I just realized, Gary.
What?
There's not one state that I found, I could be wrong, where hickory is their state tree.
Mm. I didn't see that either. Yeah.
That is just terrible. You know, because I'm reading this book right now about axes. And, well, I mean, America can't be founded or settled without the axe. I mean, it's pretty much one of our best technologies that no one talks about is the innovation that happened with axe heads in America. It just trumped all other countries.
Yeah.
But you had to have an axe handle pretty much made of hickory. I mean, you can use ash and stuff, but there's nothing beats American hickory. Like, I bought my Grands Force Brooks, whatever the hell you say it, from Sweden. Or wherever it's made.
Yeah.
And Scandinavia. And they're the best axes now, right? They make them. But they use American hickory as their handle.
Yeah.
Yeah, no one. I don't see it. Do you guys see it? I don't see hickory.
I haven't seen
anywhere.
Hickory yet, but.
The heck?
You know, maybe I'll call Illinois and have them make hickory their state tree.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like there's enough trees where each state can get something unique.
Trade off with Kentucky.
Yeah, oak is America's tree. I mean, like we said two shows ago, that in 2001, the National Arbor Day Foundation polled Americans. The number one tree picked was the oak.
Yeah.
Not a particular species, but it was oak. The runner-up was redwood,
mm-hmm.
which makes sense. You know, mm-hmm. people think of the mighty redwood, but oak is America's tree. I think it should be maple myself, but because I feel like the sugar maple is very particular to the United States,
mm-hmm.
to North America.
What about white pine?
Oh, absolutely, white pine's close too. But there's, you know, there's no other place where it grows. But then again, to be fair, sugar maple doesn't grow across the country, so we're just kind of biased here in the Northeast, maybe. But.
Yeah, well, there's, you know, there's. All around these Connecticut, Vermont. I mean, you can't go much further than that before you can tap them and the weather's right. But I mean,
New York State pretty much survived off white pine.
Right.
The whole industry was white pine at one time.
Yep.
You know, well, it pretty much made us one of the, you know, the Empire State in many ways. Yeah. But anyway.
But we're up to Indiana, and that's a tulip tree. And, you know.
Another repeat.
What's that?
It's another repeat.
Tulip tree. Well, tulip is a repeat, and can, well, it's going to repeat again down the line, but it's, I mean, I'm using, I just pulled it the other day, and I'm starting to manufacture it into siding, but I'm making, you know, tulip siding for my house and my shop in New Kingston, and I mean, the Indians use it on the longhouses, and it lasts 60 to 80 years outdoors untreated.
Jeez.
But I'm going to actually preserve it, and but there's a whole process of machining it, and you know, it's a little lengthy, but I, you know, I peeled the bark 4 years ago from logs I bought from Tri-State, and I started following loggers through the woods, and it was really tough, and yeah, they were gotten annoyed with me because I went after work. I had a headlamp on, and you know, they come to the, and it was just that I never told them I was going to show up because I didn't know when I was. And yeah, I kind of went on their thing, and they come back, and the logs, you know, no bark on their logs in the morning. It just pissed them off. So, and then I said, you know what, I'm just not going to do that anymore. So I ordered a load from Tri-State. You know, I bought about 10,000 board feet, and I only got maybe 4,500 square feet of bark from them. But, you know, the bark on the log is, you know, if the bark in the spring, by the time those logs got to me, half the bark had fallen off. Picking it, storing it in Tri-State, putting it back up. Every time you move it, more bark falls off.
Yeah.
And so anyway, but the first tree that I, it was a basswood, and I used the bark. That's when I first got the idea 15 years ago. And I used it on the inside of our cabin in New Kingston and the gables for trim and whatnot and around the snow box. But anyway, so I measured the board foot of wood in that, and the square foot of bark on that log was exactly the board foot amount that it produced for wood.
Hmm.
So I realized that, you know, a tree, the bark on a tree is the board footage. So when I had, you know, 10,000 board foot of lumber, I should have got at least 8,000 or 9,000 board foot of bark. But, you know, I got about 4,500, which was plenty more than I needed. But I, you know, put it on pallets and dried it, and, you know, I just pulled it out. But the wood on the tulip, actually, I'm building a tulip dining room table. It's a farm table that, you know, people come in. They were, you know, they were hard pressed between sycamore and a tulip, and they ended up picking tulip. And so,
how come?
It's a, I don't know. They just liked it better. I had a few pieces around, and when you first plane the lumber, the tulip lumber, it's like color of a cucumber, the inside of a cucumber. It's got that pale kind of greenish hinge, and but that doesn't stay. And I showed him some, like in my workshop, you know, I made a tool cabinet out of, you know, it's all live edge. The center and the two outside boards are live edge tulip, and, you know, they're about 24-26 inch wide. And they saw the fresh stuff, and then I brought them in, and I said, in a year, you know, it's going to turn this amber color. And so that's what they were sold on. And but I said, you know, if you want it stained, I don't do staining here. So, you know, you're going to have to take that on yourself. But if you just wait a year, it'll be the color you want. So anyway, well, they ended up taking the tulip. And it's a softer wood. It machines really easy. It's like a basswood or a cottonwood. It's a softer hardwood, and it machines nice. It dries nice. It doesn't check, and you know all wood will warp if it's grown under stress. And I found that in a lot of different woods. The figured woods seem to be the most stressed, that need the most kind of pampering and slow down the drying, take but seems like the selector hardwoods, the straight grain, easiest to dry, easiest to use for woodworking, and what it molds up. They use the poplar tulip for a lot of trim. They use trimming for basswood too, and they didn't use much cottonwood, because cottonwood is turned brittle when it gets dry. It's not as strong as the other ones. So what else can we say about the tulip?
Well, you got to cover some trees.
Well, we're going to Iowa, which is Burr Oak.
Burr Oak.
Yeah. Goodbye, Indiana. We're sailing on to Iowa. And this is it has a large crown, and it has deeply lobed leaves, and they're up to 12 inches long.
It's in the white oak family.
Yep, and they're the keystone species for many animals for food. A lot of different animals and birds feed on the acorns. It's the largest acorn of any U.S. tree, oak, and on the acorns, there's large burrs on the end of the acorn cap, and that's where it got its name from, Burr Oak. And it symbolizes strength and resilience. And it's, like you said, it's another in the white oak family. The oaks and the hickories are, as far as drying, they're one of the toughest to dry, but the toughest one is beech. I never had a tree that was so cranky when it wants to be dried. So, any beech that I ever sawed or got in after, when I bought green lumber, I put beech over in the cold storage, stickered for a year before I did anything with it. And when you dry it after that, it's happy. I mean, it just likes a year rest before you make it into something. But it checks and twists and splits. It's a really cranky wood to dry.
Yeah, Burr Oak, I imagine, is not really good timber species. The only ones I found were, really squat and wide. They're like a white oak, but they don't like to get as tall.
Well, the Burr Oak has a huge, 50-foot diameter crown on them. Yeah. And that's why I think they made it the state tree, because it produces so many nuts for the animals, and they're a good shade tree. Mm. And they're resistant to the oaks are resistant to a lot of diseases, but knock on wood, some frickin' bug will come into our country and try to take them down, I'm sure, but I'm hoping not. But they seem to be the most resistant to, years ago when we did oak, trees talk through their roots. And
talk?
I was,
heard anything.
What's that? They communicate. They don't, it's any type of communication would be kind of some kind of speech. But, if there's a large grove of oak, and this was particularly what we studied, or I read, or did the story on that time, was red oak. But, at the edge of the forest, there was this beetle or something or other that was attacking these trees. So these trees sent a signal through the roots to all the other trees, and they put that bitter toxin in their leaves and up into the leaves so that these beetles, they wouldn't eat them. It would made them distasteful. And, you know, but I think that's a lot of tree species, is that's how they survive. And it's just too bad that, some of them went down because they're, of all the communication they were doing to the roots really didn't help, put the pest, at bay. And, right now we're dealing with the ash, and that's no state tree either, but that's what, 12-15% of our population of trees here. But now we're on to Kansas, and that's the eastern cottonwood. These trees they're like the tulip. They grow really fast.
Biggest tree in the eastern United States, isn't it?
Oh, they're huge.
I also heard it was the fastest growing tree in North America.
Well, it may well be. I had, by my gallery, I had, because I mow that whole, maybe I have a big, a brush hog, basically, behind the tractor, and I just knock it down to keep it, the ticks from coming, being so thick. But anyway, it's two of these trees started probably 15 years ago, and they were perfectly spaced, same exact diameter. It was like they're mirrored of one another. And I mowed around them. I let them grow. They're got to be 40 feet tall, and they're about 5 inches in diameter already. And they're so healthy. And, they grow, but the cottonwood is, it's named the cottonwood because in the fall, when, Matt lived in Albany, we used to walk from his house to the park, and, in late September, middle, late September, we'd walk to the park, and it looked like about 6 inches of snow was on the sidewalks, but it was all from the cottonwoods that, fell to the ground. But those streets were lined with them. And they're a good shade tree, too, but they're not super strong, as far as wind resistance and all that. And, as far as lumber goes, they, when you dry it, it gets brittle. It's good. I would use it on a ceiling or a wall. I wouldn't use it for a floor, but, I would use it for a bar top or a countertop, and as far as walking on it, it would wear out, and it's you can't. Well, a lot of cottonwoods that I got in, I used them. I saw studs, two by any wall studs, no floor joists or anything like that. It wouldn't make a good, but standing straight, a stud. Basically, it just the vertical strength of a stud. It really has no, no weight bearing on it, because once you put your whatever else your siding and all that, it being held straight, and it's just down pressure. And for that, it works good. But I use all kinds of wood for studding. So, eastern cottonwood. What else can we say about that?
People used them for dugout canoes back in the day. Usually along rivers.
Because they're light and they float really well. Mm-hmm. And there's three states: Kansas, Wyoming, and Nebraska that have these for their state tree. And the leaves, if you harvest them and, heat them up and boil them in water a little bit, the salve you get from them it's good for sores and boils and all that stuff. Because there's an agent in the leaf that pulls pulls the whatever bacteria is in your skin, it just pulls it out and neutralizes it, which is, I never knew that until today when I started researching these state trees. Now we're on to Kentucky.
Kentucky.
And that's the tulip again.
Tulip popper again?
Yep, Kentucky. So
what were we talking about it should be?
White oak.
White oak.
So I got to call Illinois, have them figure out a different tree, turn their white oak over to Kentucky.
Or hickory.
Or, yeah, I think...
either or.
Hickory would...
I would imagine they have a lot of hickory down there.
I would think, yeah.
Shag bark, shell bark hickory, which is an awesome tree we don't have. I wish we had.
The pig bark of mostly what we have here, no, and shag bark.
Smooth bark, yeah.
There's very little shag bark, but it's a, I mean, I can't tell the lumber from a shag bark and a pig nut. When I get hickory in, they kind of look the same, but yeah.
Well, you should complain,
I'm glad,
Gary.
I did these state trees because, you know, I want to, some of these states that maybe they're not paying attention good. And maybe I just need to upgrade their thoughts a little bit, because I think the last thing they're concerned with in this day and age is what their state tree is. But
well, it wouldn't hurt, I don't think, if we distracted ourselves a little more with trees.
No, I think it would actually do the world a hell of a lot of good.
It's a nice bipartisan kind of thing.
Yeah. And
I hope, geez, if that becomes partisan.
Something we can actually get done.
Yeah. So the tulip we talked about. So now we're on to Louisiana. And that's the bald cypress. And I never worked with cypress. It's a protected species now, and you can't harvest it anymore.
Now that makes sense, right? I mean, that's a really boggy, swampy state. And bald cypress is so unique.
Well, it's
grows in swamps forever.
It means longevity, endurance, and mourning. That's the characteristic. It's what, you know, it's believed to be the spiritual part of that tree. It lives long and it's slow growing, and most old growth is hollow. I'd like to get my hands on a couple of those, but
I don't know how it grows in water like that.
And it's elevated. And the roots, you know, because you have this big clump at the base of them. And,
yeah, the roots can't be that deep. I know the only ones I've seen were in Texas. And I know in swampy areas they'll grow these, like, knobs on the roots.
Right.
Which some people think.
That's where I saw
how
them
they
in
breathe.
Florida. Yeah. That's what?
That's how they kind of breathe, because they have to grow these, like...
Right, that is how they breathe,
but,
yeah.
You know, if they're grown right in water, they just grow these other structures, these little knobs all over the roots, and...
But they start out, looks like a huge mushroom at the base, and, you know, I see them in Florida, and, you know, my friend Jen and her husband Drew, I mean, we leave their house, and it's on a... next to a lake, and we take the boat, and they took me all through the cypress, and oh my God, they're just, it feels magical. I mean, you're in the water, you got these huge, and some of these root balls that are on top of the water, like 48, 60 inch in diameter, and they're just, it's just, I don't know, I get giddy when I see stuff like that.
Yeah,
so,
kind of prehistoric.
I would love to have, they grow, I mean, their average lifespan is 450 years, and they grow slow, but they, as far as, and that's what hurt this species, I mean, they didn't rot outdoors. When they were harvested, they were good for so many things, furniture, you know, they don't split, they're easy to work, and you know, for outdoor furniture, they go the distance. They don't rot. They're weather resistant. Mm-hmm. Bugs don't bother them. It's like, and it's a like a. I think they would last like a black locust outdoors. They're so
maybe more.
And even probably even more.
And they grow in water, for Christ's sake.
And they produce a cone-shaped fruit that produces 5,200 seeds per pound. So that's, and you know, there's a lot of migrating birds and swamp kind of animals feed on them. And, you know, there's quite a few birds and stuff that lives around swamps that eat the seeds. And the symbol of them is it's a transition between life and death. Here we go. Wood ducks, grosbeak, and squirrels, and all waterfowl. And it lives up to 600 years. I mean, the average tree's 450. And it's great for building.
Well, let's take a break. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is State Trees of the United States with Gary Mead, Part 3. And here's a song to embrace the rain, because I think we're getting more.
I'm singing in the rain, just singing in the rain. What a glorious feel, and I'm happy again. I'm laughing at clouds so dark up above. The sun's in my heart and I'm ready for love. Let the stormy clouds chase everyone from the place. Come on with the rain, I've a smile on my face. I'll walk down the lane with a happy refrain, just singing, singing in the rain. Dancing in the rain. Yeah, 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 yeah. I'm happy again. I'm singing and dancing in the rain. And singing in the rain.
All right. Yeah, my kids love that song, Singing in the Rain. You know, they don't care about getting wet as much as we do. But
that's good. I like
it. I used to love stomping out puddles. Yeah. They're like a magnet to a kid.
You know? You're not kidding.
Mean, take any kid under 4 years old, especially. You put them by a mud puddle. The first thing they do, they try to stomp it dry. And it's, well, that's what I call it. I don't know what they're doing in there, but
I don't know. They have to, like, see if their shoes, even though they're clearly not waterproof. You gotta stick them in there, man.
But they just keep stomping in it and mud all over. And, you know, the parents are freaking out and I'm laughing my butt off. And
yeah.
They just let them play. Good grief.
Oh, man. These parents, man, some of them follow them around everywhere.
Yeah, you were saying your kids love that song. I mean,
they love it.
Yeah. We, you know, when we were kids, we used to, as long as there's no thunder and lightning.
Yeah.
We'd get in our bathing suits and run out on the lawn and all these puddles and slip and slide and roll in it and come in all filthy, dirty, and grass and all that. And Mom would take us out on the porch, take a bucket of cold water, pour it over our head.
Get the hose out.
No,
I remember when the little streams.
I don't think
would,
we could afford a hose.
When the little streams would overflow, we'd get on them in little boats or something or rafts and race. And it's just crazy. You know?
Well, I used to make, you get a kit for Christmas and you make this little plastic boat. And, you know, I used to, in the spring especially, I'd run up on the hill and I'd put them down and chase them down the hill. You know, it's floating in the water, you're running. But one year, God, I think it was maybe 4 or 5 years old, and there was kind of patchy spots of ice. Mm. My boat went under a piece of ice. I never found that thing. I went down, I got a little hatchet, I'm chopping the ice, and oh my God, I couldn't find that thing. I was so sad over that, but
damn.
I got over it.
Yeah.
My little boat, it's still floating somewhere. But we're up to Maine.
Maine.
And eastern white pine.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And it's one of the most important timber trees in the Northeast. It's good for milling, building, cabinets, floors. It's fast-growing and long-living. And if you look at the mountain ranges, the tops, most of the trees that stick way above the hardwoods are going to be the white pines or some kind of pine. Mostly white pine up on there. They don't like heat very good. They're not
white
tolerant
pine
to heat, but they don't mind the cold. And they grow in a loose soil. They don't like the, and they're very pH sensitive.
For some reason, white pine seem to come back in the Catskills. Where it was cultivated, meaning plowed. You ever notice that?
Yeah.
Like, if not, I'm not talking about pasture. I mean, sometimes it'll be in pasture, but I mean, specifically where it was plowed.
Mm-hmm.
For cauliflower or corn or whatever.
Because it's the soft, the fluffy soil, they pop up. But look at, you know, the reproduction system in trees and actually flowers, everything is, you know, one tree can produce 500,000 seeds a year. I mean, every pine cone.
Mm-hmm.
And where you're looking at, you know, 200, 250 seeds in each cone. And, you know, but, you know, the animals live off that, too. And, you know, they eat that. And I was hunting one year, and I was right underneath a white pine. And I kept hearing noises, and I thought a deer is coming. I'm looking, and you know, finally after, one hit me right on top of the head. So I'm looking up, and I'm like, what the heck is going on? It was there was a red squirrel up there chewing them off, and they go up the tree, they chew them, they fall to the ground, then they go and they harvest them, put them wherever. But I never realized that, though. I thought they just picked the ones off the ground. But they actually go up the tree and chew them off. And as long as I, you know, because if you're hunting and you see a red squirrel, and if they see you especially,
yeah.
Oh, my God, they ruin your hunting trip.
Yeah, you want to kill them.
Like, hey, he's over here. He's over here. Oh, don't come here. Don't. And they run up and down the tree, and they look at you, and they run to another tree, and they look at you again. And,
yeah.
You know.
Gray squirrels usually a little more discreet, you know.
Yeah, yeah. They kind of mind their own business. Them and chickadees. Chickadees are the coolest.
They're curious little guys. Chickadees.
Oh, my God.
I don't know why they're so curious about humans, but they are.
They come up so close, but they don't make any noise, and they're just so fluffity, and and they're so cute. And chickadee-dee-dee, chickadee-dee-dee. Well, I talk to them when they come around. But anyway, the eastern white pine, it'll live up to 450 years old. I think there's some older ones that they're in the mountains here, but
200 footers, a couple in New York State.
Well, back in I read this story about trees from ancient times, and back when, you know, they first started going across the ocean from one continent to another, they favored the white pines for their, you know, they could find something 200 foot, that's perfectly straight, and you know, they used them for their...
Plus, they float.
And they float, yep.
You could float them down the Hudson or the Delaware, the Susquehanna.
Yep.
They build rafts of them. Imagine being a guy who was on the raft. You build a shanty on the raft and live there and float it down all the way from Oneonta to the Chesapeake Bay.
Yep.
That's living.
Yep. Yeah, that's...
Or you're a guy who hops around moving the logs with a little cant hook.
Yep. Running on, you know, across the thing, unbinding them from when they get kind of caught in on a curve in the river and whatnot.
Yeah, we forget what these people did.
Oh, my God. And, you know, we don't quite have the stamina anymore that those folks used to have.
We don't have the tolerance to risk that they had.
It was a big risk. And, you know, they did it out of love and, you know, mostly for their families, which is really the coolest part about it. So now we're up to Maryland.
Maryland.
Guess what that is?
Some kind of oak?
Excuse me, white oak again.
Oh, man, yeah. Hey, so, you know, they love oak.
Oak is a big, basically a staple in our environment.
There's other oaks out there, though.
What's that?
There's other oaks out there.
Well, there's pin oak. I love the pin oaks. They grow enormous. And, you know, Mitch, there was one close to his house in Pine Bush. We took that down and you know, we took the chainsaw mill and sawed it in the slabs. I dried it. It's just so beautiful.
It's just a pain to handle.
What's that?
It's just a pain if you have to remove the branches.
Oh, my
God. The branches are. In fact, I think that tree's branches are more barbed wire-like than any other tree.
Yeah.
It's a pain. But, yeah, they're cool.
Well, they're thin and springly. They'll
grow in compacted soil, clay. They don't care. They'll punch right through that stuff.
Yep.
They laugh at it.
Yep. But, you know, I actually have a table. The flower petal table is a pin oak that comes from.
How's the wood? Do you see any of those pin-like branches on the wood? Or?
Well, not in the bowl of the, because Mitch cut the whole top and all that up, but I didn't see any down. Yeah, actually, there were some of that.
Might be some deeper in where there used to be.
In the bottom of it. But I would say up into the, you know, you got your bowl where there were no limbs, and then we got up to the, you know, the first limb to the, and then, it, you know, trimmed the limbs off to still a sawable log.
Yeah.
But Mitch cut all that up for firewood, and we just sawed the main log. I took it back to the mill and processed it there. But it's a beautiful, hard, it's a very good hard tree. So white oak is three states so far.
Three states.
And now we're on to Massachusetts, which is American elm. Which,
you poor state.
That's a species that's... it's
Seen better times.
I think it started, the disease started in the 20s, 30s. And
Dutch elm disease.
Dutch elm disease. And they still sprout. Mm-hmm. And they still grow.
They still live.
And they still live. But yeah, they,
some of them, there's ones, there's survivors. They just eventually get it.
Well, I'm hoping maybe someday, because I know the one by the Fresh Town.
Yeah.
I was talking to Leo. He's, Tuesday's 10% off, so I go to Fresh Town and
grocery store,
buy a couple things down there, 10% off, because I'm old. They give me a 10% discount. Yeah. It sucks being old, but you get some discounts. So anyway, so that elm there is so beautiful, and I've had my eye on it for years, right along the east branch.
Tree.
And you told me two years ago or something.
More than that now.
You,
it's probably 5 years ago.
Well, you told me 2 years ago that you did something to that tree.
We did.
Yeah.
We injected propozole in it, but...
But it's, and I was telling Leo, I said, see that tree there? You know, Ryan from the, he saved this tree, and what a beautiful elm. And I mean, I love the elms because they're, if they're growing out, and they were a good shade tree in the villages and towns. And you know, the reason for that being, they would have this long bowl, and they, I always called them the umbrella tree because the top umbrella's out. And, you know, it's so 10, 12 years ago, Dad and I are on some back road. I forget where the hell we're in, you know, the town of Maryland or something. And we're driving through and farmland. Dad, he always took me on all these back roads because when we lived on the farm, he used to, you know, do artificial insemination. He was a breeder, and you know, he had a tank with this 4,200 degrees below zero semen, and he'd take that out. And he, but he knew all the farms in the around the. He knew all these back roads. So one day I'm driving along, and I go, "Holy shit, Dad! Look at that!" And he goes, "What?" And I pulled over and I shut the truck off, and I said, "Have you ever seen a specimen of elm so beautiful?" Yeah. He said, "Huh?" And I go,
"My son is crazy."
I put my four ways on, and I'm running down to this guy's pasture. I didn't see him. Maybe I didn't look for posters on it. It might have been posted, but I ran down. I took like 10, 12, I'm walking around. I'm taking
Get away from that tree.
Dad, come here. Stand by the tree. I want your picture with it.
He always does this.
I ain't coming down there.
Don't let him out of the car. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. I'm not letting you drive anymore. When I got back to the truck, he says, "I'm not letting you drive anymore."
Yeah, kill him.
I said, we're not in a hurry, Dad.
You think that elm's still there? Wherever it was?
It's probably still there, there's a few of them that you know, they're virgin, and because what saves them is this was like in the middle of probably a 50-acre pasture, and there were no other 3 minutes. There were no other trees around it. Well, we made it up to American elm, which is Massachusetts.
Yeah, you got a poem, right?
Yes, I do.
Well, you got 3 minutes. Oh, you got less than 3 minutes now, Gary.
All right. Well, this is a three-minute poem. I wrote this last Saturday at 8 o'clock at night. Earth, my religion, nature, my Bible. Man-made churches for many religious beliefs. Folks practicing what they've been taught. A place where they feel most at peace. Language in these buildings confuses me. 10 sides to every story as I see. Anymore do not know what to believe. No wrong from your side, no wrong from mine. Need to learn better how to all get along. Earth, my religion. Nature, my Bible. Gripping nature gently by the hand. Smelling, feeling, listening to her song. Sometimes tortured path is the one leading to glory while you remain strong. Words placed where they belong can make or break a good song. Walking out the door every day, day of worship all along the way. Earth under my feet as I look around, nothing has ever made me more proud. Magnitude of nature is second to none. Wonderful wows in nature all the time. Without nature wows, life not worth a dime. Earth, my religion. Nature, my Bible. An open book, respectfully read. Living in nature clears my head. Worshipping earth and nature along the way. Paying my respects every single day. Looking nature straight in the face, while earth moving gently under my feet. Wind, the instrument. Melody, the blowing trees. Sun on a warm day with a light breeze. Thunder, lightning, hail, snow, sleet, and rain. Sounds of abundant rhythms and chords. Birds, animals, reptiles, all have a voice. And plants, also a big part of the chorus. All sounds in the church where I belong. Fairies and gnomes all over the place. Church where I be worshiping every day. Soil on my knees when kneeling to pray. Nature, Earth's Bible, guiding my way. And that's my poem for tonight. Thank you, folks, for putting up with me and tolerating all the wonderful...
Amen.
Amen. That's Amen. It.
Okay. Well, that's, thank you, Gary, so much. If you just missed the show, that was with Gary Mead. He comes on third Wednesday and talking about the state trees of the United States. And see you next week. Have a good night.
Peace, everybody.
Oh, the neon lights were flashing and the icy wind did blow. The water seeped into his shoes and the drizzle turned to snow. His eyes were red, his hopes were dead, and the wine was running low. And the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way. Getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long forgotten year. When the wildflowers did bloom in the forest, she touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games. In an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town.